ready? We started chapter 4. Chapter 4, we started talking about forces. Forces are the cause of the change in motion of an object. What do I mean by the change in motion of an object? Basically, if a body's at rest and it all suddenly starts moving, we know that the force is responsible for that. If the velocity changes, we know a force is responsible for that. And we'll see several different forces in chapter 4 and 5 so that we can clarify that point. The starting point will be Newton's laws of motion. There were three laws of motion: the law of inertia, this is the first law. The second law we can just refer to as F equals MA. And the third law is the law of action and reaction. Law of inertia. Inertia is the tendency of a body to remain at rest or to remain in motion at a constant velocity. The law of inertia says that a body will tend to stay at rest or in motion at a constant velocity, unless acted upon by a net force. If the total force acting on the body is not zero, it will accelerate. In Newton's second law, it says, if I know what the net force is acting on a body, I can find the acceleration. Right? The acceleration is proportional to that net force. We did a lab yesterday in which we tried to get the net force to be zero, in which case we had equilibrium. We'll talk more about equilibrium problems by the end of the chapter. Law of action, reaction. For every action, there's an opposite but equal reaction. Okay, so we have a body. If force is exerted on the body responds in kind and reacts to it. Okay, and we will say a little more about that as well. The second law, again, even though I said F equals MA, it really means the sum of all the forces acting on a given body will be equal to the mass of that body times its acceleration, right? On this side is the motion, on that side are the forces. Forces are vectors. So we have to think of adding up forces the way we add vectors. So that's where we come back to what we learned in chapter 1 about adding vectors. How do I think about adding vectors analytically? We break them up into components. So the component form of this, for the most part, we're just doing things in two dimensions, though in reality there are three-dimensional problems. All right. So if I'm looking at forces that are in the plane acting on somebody, then we write down the sum of all the x components of the forces is mass times the x component of the acceleration. The sum of all the y components of the forces is the mass times the y component of the acceleration. Given the different forces acting on a body, you can predict how it will move. Okay, so that's the idea here. We need a few forces to work with, though. All right, I did a couple examples of this. We're going to see more applications of this today and tomorrow. So the first force I introduced was the force of gravity, which we're well aware of, okay, especially when we fall. Okay, so we're throwing things out windows. Newton's law of gravitation says that there is a force between any two bodies. That force is directly proportional to the product of the masses, and inversely proportional, which means divide by, to square the distance between them. So I know what the distance is between the two of these, and that's what the magnitude of the force is. So mass 1 is pulled towards mass 2 along a line that connects the two of them. Mass 2 is pulled towards mass 1. This works for point objects. We have to do a little more work when these are not point objects. If these are nice spherical distributions of mass, then we can treat them like point objects, at least talking about the forces between these. Okay. But for extended objects, like looking to see how the moon acts on the mass of the Earth, right? You have to think of the Earth as consisting of a bunch of little masses, and each of the masses of the Earth are at different distances from the moon, aren't they? Alright, so here's the Earth, there's the moon, and this point on this side is closer than that point, so the force is greater here. And so that's going to account for things like the tidal bulge of the Earth, okay, or, you know, the tides of the water, because water moves a lot easier than rock, right? So, it gets a little more complicated with extended objects. The constant of proportionality is the universal gravitational constant. It's given by 6.67 times 10 to the minus 11 with appropriate units so that we get newtons out on this side. We did an example here showing that this is a fairly weak force. Though you may not think it's weak, right? Anybody that's falling in a significant distance would not think that gravity was weak. Okay, but fairly small. And we indicated that by looking at two relatively small bodies like people and what the force of attraction was between them. Then I went and said, well, what if I have the Earth attracting a body? And what we found out was that if I'm thinking about bodies that are close to the surface of the Earth, that the gravitational force is what leads to what we call a weight. So we found that the weight of an object is the mass of the body times little g, where g is the acceleration due to gravity. At the surface of the Earth, g is equal to this thing, where big M is the mass of the Earth, big R is the radius of the Earth. If I go far enough above the surface of the Earth, this value of g can change. Yes?
What did you say the little g once again?
The usual 9.8 meters per second squared.
Okay, what did you call it?
Acceleration due to gravity. So this is our usual little g, which, by the way, we're going to try to measure tomorrow in the lab. Okay? So, whole point is, if I have given them a mass, I can compute the weight. Little m has to be in kilograms so that I get newtons out. Units of force along here, as I described yesterday, will be in newtons, right? As long as the basic things, the mass and the acceleration, are in your MKS units. Mass is kilograms, acceleration is meters per second squared. Okay? So that's what we know so far. We need a few more forces. Today is start introducing some more forces so we can look at other situations. Alright, weight is one force. Okay, given a mass, we're always going to have to put the weight in. Or mostly all. Other types of forces that we're going to introduce and define, we're going to introduce something called a normal force. Tension, friction. These are some of the main forces that are introduced in this chapter. And then next week when we do chapter 5, we will introduce some other types of forces. Alright, so let's start off with normal force. Consider a flat surface, and let me put an object on the surface. And I would like to ask what forces are acting on that object. So, like yesterday, coffee cup, put it on the counter, and the question is, what forces are acting on this? So the very first answer is obvious, gravity. There is a weight. That object has a weight. If I knew the mass, I could get the weight. W is mc. If that were the only force acting on the body, the net force would not be zero, and this body would accelerate, right? flip it through. Rest at one instant, the next instant, it's going to be moving. Is that coffee cup going anywhere? Hasn't yet, right? Not until I pick it up and I exert another force on it. But why is that coffee cup not moving?
Friction.
The table's pushing back. Okay? Coffee cup's pushing down on the table. The table's pushing back on the coffee cup. And it's pushing back with an equal force so that the net force is zero. So there is a force, an upward force, being exerted by this surface. So that these two, when I add them together, I get a total force or a net force of zero. That force, which the surface is pushing up, is going to be designated N, is called the normal force. Normal is another word that we use for perpendicular. You will see the word normal used several times. So normal means perpendicular. So this is perpendicular to the surface. There is no normal force in a problem if there's no surface. Very often I'll see other problems that I'll put together that you'll see other problems later, and people will go in their quiz and put a normal force in that doesn't belong. You need a surface. So normal force is going to be perpendicular to the surface. Normal means perpendicular. Okay? Now, if this were the only situation, then those are the only forces. The cup's just sitting there, so we have what? The total force is equal to the normal force plus the weight as vectors. That's the net force. It is going to, according to Newton's second law, is going to be equal to what?
Yeah.
Zero, because it's not accelerating, right? So this is zero. Technically, I should put an arrow on the zero to indicate that that's a vector, the zero vector, not just the zero scalar. So what does this mean? That means if I take a look at all the x components and add them up, I get zero. If I take all the y components and add them up, I get zero. What's the x component of n?
Yeah.
Why? Because all vertical vectors have no x component, right? If I shine a flashlight straight down on there, right, the shadow's a dot. What is the x component of W?
Yeah.
Zero, for the same reason. So I don't have to worry about x components in this case. Everything's in a line. So I just need to look at the y components. What is the y component? Let me write y component. Of n. Well, we don't know exactly what it is, right? But we know that the magnitude of n is going to be what the y component is. So I can just write down n with no arrow. What does the y component look like for the weight?
W,
which, if I knew the mass, let's say this is a mass of mass m, what would the weight be?
Mg.
So the y component is mg. Is it? What can you tell me about W compared to n?
It should be equal.
It's negative. Pointing down, isn't it? So anything pointing down is negative, which means the component here should be negative. Another way to look at this, I've got a vector pointing down. At what angle does that make with respect to the positive x-axis?
90 degrees.
See?
270
if I go this way, right?
90.
What is the sine of 270? Negative 1. So again, we get a negative, right? If I go back and take to get the y component, the magnitude times the sine of the angle. Okay? So let's see again. N is going up. W is going down. Its component is minus mg. This must add up to what is the y component of 0?
Yeah.
Wasn't a trick question. So what does this tell me? This tells me, in this particular case, for this problem, if I just have my coffee cup sitting on the table, the normal force is mg. Now, one of the things that people get a little upset about is that, you know, they really like to say, oh, I have a quantity in physics, there must be an equation. Right? So, Dr. Herman just wrote n equals mg on the board, so n must be mg, and I'll memorize that. Wrong. N is not always mg. Just for this case of something sitting here with no other vertical forces, we're going to see, as we go through more examples, that sometimes n is mg and sometimes it's something else. Right? All we know is this is the normal force. This is the force that the table is pushing up, the ground is pushing up on an object. That can vary, as we will see when we do some examples. One example, since I've got this picture on the board and everybody's wondering why, okay, is something that we can label as apparent weight. Colored stuff right here. So related to the problem of normal force is something called apparent weight. So before I think about the apparent part, you need to know something about actual weight. How do you know how much you weigh?
Scale.
There's a scale, right? So we could introduce an old-fashioned scale here and put a little scale sitting over there, a platform that you stand on. So you've got this box with a thing you stand on, and what you essentially have is a spring at the bottom. So when you push down on here, the spring press compresses and has some kind of needle, or maybe it's a little fancier with some electronics, right? You get on there, you push down, the spring pushes back up, right? That's going to contribute to the force pushing up, and then it registers somehow with some, could have some needle or something that moves, or, you know, as I said, now we have digital stuff, so there's other ways to sense what's going on. So I have this person has a weight. Again, in a lot of these problems, instead of getting too complicated in the figure, right, you can represent it as a point. So for example, here's my object. I can represent that as a point. I can ask, what forces are acting on that? Okay, well, gravity, which is the weight, is mg, right, pointing down, and a normal force, right? The scale is pushing up with a normal force, and those are the only forces acting on the body. So now I isolate, right? I don't have to draw this complicated figure. For that particular mass, I've drawn this. This is what's called a free body diagram. Okay, so we don't get into the details of the body, but we think of, all right, all the point forces are acting on this body at this point, and then we can analyze it. So this is essentially the same picture I have here, isn't it? So what we find out is that the normal force that the scale is pushing up with is the actual force that's being registered on the scale. So if I wanted to say, what is the weight of this person, all you have to do is tell me what is the normal force, because that's what the scale registers. Right, so the actual weight is mg in this case. We've already derived that, right? N must be equal to mg to cancel, right? So the actual weight is given by the normal force equals mg, right? Mg is your actual weight, so the normal force agrees with that. All right, so that's relatively easy. But the idea that I'm trying to get across is that when you stand on the scale, the normal force, okay, that the scale is pushing up on you is what's actually registering on the scale. Now we're going to change this because there's an apparent here. What I'm going to do is take and put this whole system an elevator. Alright, so we've got some cable up here that's being operated by some mechanism. This box represents an elevator, and let's assume that this elevator is accelerating. My claim is my problem has just changed. So how do we take care of that situation? All right, let me erase the board. While immigration, of course, you're thinking about how does this change things, right? Yes. Okay, so I have my elevator sitting here. Okay, so let's see. So there's a smaller rendition of what we have at the other side. Okay. There's a positive acceleration being indicated, or just an acceleration. Okay, cable's pulling it up, right? Changing the velocity at every instant. If I look at the forces on the scale, right, we have the weight of the forces on this body. We have the weight going down, mg. We have the normal force pushing up. And remember, the normal force is what's going to register on the scale. So let's ask, all right? Newton's second law, take the net force is equal to the mass times the acceleration. Just do this in the y direction because there are no x components. Right? Y component of the normal is pointing up. I don't know what it is, but I can just write down its magnitude. All right, it's positive. Mg is down, so we have minus mg. We did this before with coffee cup on the table, or just for the actual weight, right? So I have normal force up, mg down. Those are my forces. This is going to be equal to what? The mass times the acceleration. Is the acceleration zero this time?
No.
There is an acceleration. So before I put zero here. Now I have an acceleration, so I'd like we'll put MA, where A indicates the acceleration being provided by the cable. Now let's solve this for the normal force. What do we get? N is equal to MG plus MA. Just bring the MG to the other side. And what do we have here? Let's see. MG is the actual weight. MA is some extra piece because the system is accelerating. This is what you see on the scale now. It's not the actual weight. All right, so that's the apparent weight. So N is apparent, MG is actual. Now let's think about this. All right, get on an elevator. The elevator starts to go up. What does this tell you? This tells you what? That you're feeling heavy. Right? If you were staying on a scale, you would weigh more. You'd probably jump off the scale real quick, right? You would probably prefer it if the acceleration were negative. Because then you could get on the scale and feel like you've lost weight. All right? So that's the idea, if you take a look at this. So we could throw some numbers around. Let's see. Let's consider, I don't know, an 80-kilogram person. What's the actual weight of an 80-kilogram person? Let's see. MG. All right, take 80 and multiply it times 9.8, and you're telling me it's 784? Roughly. Say about 780 newtons. Notice weight is in newtons. Remember the first day we said something about mass not being the same as weight? Mass is in kilograms, mass, right? Remember, mass is a measure of inertia. Weight is a force. Okay, the weight should be in newtons. Do not confuse the two. So if this object does not have a weight of 80 kilograms, it has a mass of 80 kilograms. Little thing to point out. All right, 780 newton person. Let's assume that the elevator is accelerating at, 2 meters per second squared. What would the apparent weight be? Well, according to what we just derived, the apparent weight is going to be the actual weight plus MA. So the apparent weight, we'll write that as N. Just to remind us that that's the normal force, is equal to mg plus ma. Mg is 780 newtons. So we got the 780 newtons already from this part, plus, 80 kilograms times 2. So you take the 2 meters per second squared, multiply it times mass. That's the additional amount. 2 times that's 160. 160 plus 780 is?
940.
Okay, so the actual weight is 780. All right, you're on this elevator. And now, accelerating at 2 meters per second squared means that this thing is speeding up. Going upward, speeding up, I could have a negative acceleration. Of course, we know a negative acceleration could come in all sorts of forms. The elevator could be going down, speeding up, going down. Or it could be slowing down as it's going up. That's another way to have a negative acceleration. Right? So if you're in one of these really big elevators, like the Sears Tower or whatever, right? Get in those elevators and they just speed up real quick and then they slow down. So you can feel these different sensations. All right? And if you just happen to have a scale with you, you could try out the experiment, right? Yeah. So what happens if the acceleration is negative? You don't add 160, you subtract 160. What if the elevator is going up at a constant velocity of, say, 5 meters per second? What's your apparent weight?
Your actual weight.
It's still 780. It's not accelerating. Watch out for questions. People think I put tricks on quizzes. That's not a trick. That's just think about the physics. All right? If I give you a constant acceleration, that means no acceleration. I mean, a constant velocity, that means no acceleration. It's just the apparent weight, but that'd be the actual weight. All right, let's do some other types of problems involving normal force. Okay? Here's another example to prove the point that the normal force is not always mg. Let's consider a kid or somebody pulling a wagon. And so here we have a little handle. Okay. I'm just trying to think of how heavy I want my wagon to be. Let's try a 60 kilogram wagon. Huh? Well, how could I get a 60 kilogram wagon? I could put a kid in it, right? Right? So the wagon could have some kind of a load. Alright? So just throw a kid in the wagon. Okay. So, or, you know, rocks or whatever. I mean, a whole wagon of nothing. Okay. So let's assume that I'm pulling this at some angle. I don't know, 30 degrees is always a nice angle. And let's assume that I'm pulling, so I'm pulling, dragging this cart. I've got to exert a force. So let's say that the force I'm exerting along this handle is 100 newtons of force. What's the question? Is this going to be going anywhere? Okay. The other thing is, let's assume that there is no friction. It's a nice, smooth surface. I'm not pulling this through mud, okay, which we know is harder to do, right? Some of us know, right? What do you think I'm going to ask? What's the acceleration? Okay. As I am pulling this with this constant force at that angle, I would like to know, what is the acceleration? Okay. Alright, so here's a problem. We have to think about drawing a free body diagram. Again, with a free body diagram, you do this for every mass that you have in your problem. So far, we're only doing one mass problem. You're going to see some problems that we have more than one mass. But here's my mass. Let's consider this object and think about that wagon and what forces are acting on the wagon. Okay, give me a force.
Gravity.
Gravity, or it has a weight. Any other forces acting on that wagon?
The ground.
The ground. Okay. Which is a normal force, right? Right, the ground is a surface, so there is a normal force. You'll notice that the book uses F sub N. I just like to write N. Where possible, try to avoid subscripts. Okay, is that it?
Then you are
fine. My 100 newtons. So somewhere, think of this as horizontal. There's another force coming off at 30 degrees. Let me call that force F. Right? F is 100 newtons at 30 degrees. Okay? Just for labels, I'm going to give it a name so you can see what we're doing. Any other forces? No. No other forces. We're ignoring any frictional forces or anything like that, mostly because we don't know what friction is and how to model it yet, right? Okay, I need to do what? Well, we need to go back to Newton's second law of motion. The net force is the mass times the acceleration. So let's see. If I add these forces up, I have N plus W plus F. Those are my three forces, right? All the force stuff is there. The motion stuff is on the other side of the equation. The total force is equal to mass times acceleration. All right, there's Newton's second law. What I have to do now is make sense out of it. In this problem, notice not all the forces are vertical. Right, this one's got a horizontal extent. The acceleration is horizontal. So we have things that are going to have x components and others that will have y components. So we're going to have to break things up. So once I've gotten indicated all my forces, right, here's F equals ma. I need to break it into components like we have here. The net x components are m times the x component of a, etc. Okay, so let's write these down in component form. X components. Let's take a look at this equation and write down the x components. terms of this picture. What is the x component of n?
Zero.
So let me just write zero to remind you in your notes. Okay, when you go back to look at them, what happened? What is the x component of w?
Zero.
The x component of f? I have an x component of f. How do I get the x component there? You take the force, the magnitude of the force times the cosine of the angle, right? So now you can see where all these components are going to start coming in. So what is my force? It's magnitude is 100, cosine of 30. Okay? Is equal to the mass, which I designated as 60 kilograms, times the x component of acceleration. Okay, now, this is a point where we want to be careful. I could put a sub x, but what I'm going to do is, notice how I've drawn the picture. I've assumed that this cart is going forward, or is accelerating. The only change in its motion is horizontal. I'm hoping my cart doesn't lift off the ground. Okay, or sink into the ground, right? So that's a big assumption sometimes. So I'm pulling this cart. I'm assuming that this is accelerating horizontally. So I will just put 60A and not now avoid any subscripts. You could put A sub X. Okay, but there is an assumption. There's often an assumption here that of this nature that we do not expect the object to be jumping off the ground. Okay? Wow. This is one equation and one unknown. I can solve this for A. What am I looking for? I'm looking for A. So, guess what? I'm almost done. All right, so let's see. 100 times the cosine of 30 is?
87.
What?
87.
87 is 68. So A is 87 divided by 60. I don't know. You guys are either quick or you're ahead of me. Let's see. Everybody else know this? Okay. Again, look at the x components on both sides. You get an equation. Hopefully, you can solve that for the unknown. Obviously, since there are going to be two, there can be in general two equations. You may end up with two equations and two unknowns and problems. Yeah, we'll see more of that as we move on between today and tomorrow. Why wouldn't I look at the y component? Because I'm done. But I may need to look at the y component. So let's, for the fun of it, even though I am done, if this were a quiz question, I could go on to the next problem. But there are other reasons we may want to look at y components. Are there any other unknowns in this problem that we could look for? Is there anything in here we don't know?
Velocity.
All right, well, let's see what pops out. Let's look at the y components and then maybe we'll be a little clearer on what possibly could come out of here. Y components. So in general problems, you really have to put down the x components and the y components. Here we were just lucky that we got the answer right away. What is the y component of n? Well, n is pointing upward. We don't know n. Just like the problem we did before, right? Look at this one. Right? There's n. We don't know n. There is no equation for n in general. So we write down n. What is the y component of the weight?
W
or minus mg. Remember, we should be starting to see a pattern here for the weight, right? Minus mg. F. What is a Y component for F? Well, we have to come back here. Notice right triangles are beginning to come in handy, right? F is run off in this direction. There's the X component, the Y component is the vertical. If this is pointing upward, it's positive. If it's pointing downward, it's negative. Is this positive or negative?
Positive.
What is the length of that side of the triangle? It is 100 times the sine. Well, if I use the cosine up here, I probably need to use the sine down here. Okay. Of course, you can compute that number, but I want to just spell it out. That's equal to what? Mass times the vertical acceleration. What is the vertical acceleration of the wagon? Zero. Again, I'm assuming the wagon's not going to all of a sudden go from rest vertically, right, to jumping up or down. This is zero. All right? Okay, let's put some number. What do we not know in this? Now, I see a bunch of letters. Which one don't we know?
N.
We don't know the normal force. Well, let's solve that for the normal force. That's where this will come in handy. So the normal force is what? Bring the mg over. Bring the 100 sine 30 over to the other side. That means minus 100 sine 30. Of course, we can plug the numbers in. We know the mass. What is little g? 9.8 meters per second squared. Notice that the normal force is not mg like it was in the other problem. It's mg minus something. Okay, what does that mean physically? Well, if I have my wagon just sitting here, right, the ground's pushing up on the way to the wagon. But if I am pulling, all right, I'm helping to pull some of that wagon up in some sense. So this amount is how much F is pulling up on the wagon, right? So the ground actually doesn't have to push so hard. Okay, as you're doing things. We need to compute this number and finish the problem. What's mg?
588.
That's
not mg, that's total.
Oh, that's total. Sorry,
588. Mg is 588. Minus 50 is equal to now 538, or I'd say about 540 watts. Of course, that's one complication for using N as the normal force is that you don't want to confuse it with a unit. Alright. So, we know the acceleration, which was the answer to the original problem, but we can also find the normal force. Alright, the normal force is not always mg. You often have to figure out what N is. In situations where there is no vertical component other than the weight, then the normal force would be mg. Okay, let's take a couple minute break. Here's a mass. And let's say that's attached to the ceiling or something. And I want to look at the forces involved. Again, there's a weight. But there is no surface. This is not sitting on a surface, so don't give me any normal forces. Okay. What would the other force be? Well, we know the cable's pulling up on this. So the cable is pulling up, and that cable is pulling up with a particular tension, which we typically will designate T for tension. Tension is another one of those things that there is not a general equation for. Tension can vary depending upon the problem. The tension in the rope typically is the same everywhere. This rope is also exerting a force on the ceiling, and so there is a. This rope not only is pulling up on the mass, it's pulling down on the ceiling with the same force, just in opposite direction, right? Which means that ceiling better be able to support that force. If I go and put enough mass on here, we don't want the ceiling to come down, right? So typically the tension is exerted throughout the cable. So whenever you see a rope or a cable or something like that in the problem, you should expect tension. If there are no ropes, don't give me tension. Okay, let's see. Let's bring up some examples which we can use tension. Again, let's consider a surface. Let's assume there's no friction. A nice smooth surface that an object can slide across. And I'm going to take two bodies this time. I'm going to connect to these a rope. And I'm going to pull on the one body. And see what we get. Okay, let's see. Let me put some masses in here. 40 kilograms. 20 kilograms. You guys didn't like my 60, so cut it back a little bit. Okay. And let's say we pull with 100 newtons of force on both bodies. We're assuming, again, there's no force opposing this. There's no force opposing that. Okay, nice and smooth. Add that in the next section. And then now we can ask a couple things. Just like before, we can ask, what's the acceleration? Well, let's assume that this is accelerating horizontally. And let's also ask, what is the tension in the cable between them? Yes?
Should they accelerate both nuts?
Okay, good question. Do you think these are going to accelerate at the same acceleration? What if one's not going as fast as the other? What happens? The rope gets longer. Okay, now that's possible with a rubber band maybe. Okay, but let's assume they stay a fixed distance. So they're both going to accelerate at the same acceleration. Do we agree? That's reasonable? But that's a good question. Okay, let's think about this. We'll call that mass 1. Call this one mass 2. Okay, we'll give these names. So we have M1 for mass 1, M2 for mass 2. There are two masses in the problem. Newton's second law says for each mass, the sum of the forces is the mass times the acceleration. So I have to look at each mass individually and look at the free body diagram for each mass. So let's look at mass 1 and ask what forces are acting on mass 1. Mass 1 being, of course, the 40 kilogram one. I labeled it that way. So there's mass 1. What forces are acting on the 40 kilogram mass.
Okay.
I mean, what did I say? Forces? Okay, gravity. And weight. Okay, there's the weight. What else? Normal force. Anything else acting on that?
The 100 newtons you're pulling.
The 100 newtons is not acting on the force.
The tension.
The tension is. Right? The 100 newtons is acting on the second mass. So the tension, which way was the tension acting? Left or right? Pulling this way. So there's a tension pulling in that direction. Any other forces? Okay. No. Okay, so what do we have? We have the total force is N plus W plus T. That's the total force acting on mass 1. Is equal to the mass times the acceleration. So this mass, let's call that M1 for mass 1, times the acceleration. Again, we're just going to assume the acceleration is horizontal, so I can write A instead of A sub X. Well, actually, I can't do that yet. I'll still in vector form, sorry. Okay, there are the total forces acting on mass 1. Let's look at mass 2. Do the same thing for mass 2. There's mass 2. What's acting on mass 2?
Gravity.
The weight. But is W here equal to W there?
No.
So what I actually should be doing back here is putting subscripts. Call that weight 1. Call this weight 2. What else? Normal force. Is that the same normal force? Probably not. Call that N2, which means this will be N1. So come back to normal force here and put a subscript of 1, because that, right? I have forces acting here, forces acting there. I'd like to make sure their names are different. They're different. Okay, what else?
Tension.
There's a tension. Which way is it acting?
Right.
To the left. That direction. What's that direction? This body. The rope's pulling on it, right? If I pull this, that is pulling. If I've got a heavier object here, it's going to be harder to pull this way because that rope's pulling. Right? So that's a tension. Actually, that's pointing in an opposite direction from this, so I need a 2 and a 1 here. Technically.
Can you put the tension the other way as well?
It has the same magnitude, we'll see in a minute.
There is a tension both directions.
There's only one rope. Depends how I actually apply this other force. But there is, I mean, you're right, there's another force. You're thinking about this, right? Yes, there is another force. We're not done. All right, so that killed that question. I guess, are there any more? We already know there's another force. I'll just call that F. This could be from a cable. This could be another tension, a different tension. Right? Depends how I pull on it. Right? I could just have a handle on it, not pulling it with my arm. Okay? Sorry, there are more forces on this one, aren't there? Okay, let's add them up. N2 plus W2 plus C2. That looks almost like that. Now I have an F. Equals. Sum of the forces is mass times acceleration. In this case, it's the second mass, M2, the acceleration, A. Okay? So we have two masses. We have two sums corresponding to each mass. Now I have to break these all down in the component form, right? X and Y components here, X and Y components there. Since I am only interested in stuff that's horizontal, I really don't need, in this case, to worry about the Y component. Alright, if I look at the Y components, the only Y components here are the normal force and the weight, which means I can compute the normal force from here. Alright, the only vertical components there are the normal and the weight. We know what the normal force is, but I didn't ask for the normal force, so I'm not going to do it this time. Okay? We just need X components. So for mass 1, let's look at the X components. Of the first equation. What is the X component of the normal force? X component of the weight. T1. Well, it's, we don't know what the tension is. Let's call it T. So we have 0 plus 0 plus T. Let's say the magnitude of the tension is T. It's pointing in a positive direction, right? So that's T is equal to M1 times the X component of the acceleration. But I've determined that the acceleration just has a horizontal component, so we call it A. Well, that doesn't do too much. We know M1. M1 is 40 kilograms, right? This involves two things I don't know. I guess I need another equation somewhere. Well, we'll get it from here. Okay, let's go to mass 2. Again, we're just trying to look at the X component. Looking at this picture, right, we can see anything vertical has no X component. So it's easy now that we have our diagram. X component of N2, X component of weight, X component of T2 is a tension. That's one rope. I said before that the tension throughout the rope was the same. What I meant is the magnitude of the tension. We have a tension on mass 1 pulling this way, a tension going that way. They're just opposite directions with the same magnitude. So the tension, T2, has an X component of minus T. Right? So the tension in the rope here, it's pulling T that way on the second mass, pulling T the opposite direction on that mass. So if we're at 60 newtons, 60 newtons this way on the 20, 60 newtons that way on the 40. Okay. So one rope, the tension throughout is the same. F, that's 100, positive, equals M2 times the acceleration. Well, I know M1, I know M2. What is this going to be? Two equations and two unknowns. I can solve these simultaneously. Okay. In fact, let's see. What I need to do is actually come in and put in these values. T is equal to, what is the mass 1? 40. So in the first equation, I'll just put in the 40 so that I can see just the variables I don't know. Minus T plus 100 equals M2 was what, 20? Okay. So I rewrote these two equations, putting the masses in. I probably could have put them in earlier. Right, two equations and two unknowns. How do I solve two equations and two unknowns? Well, you learned all sorts of ways to do this in your algebra class. Right? There's no one particular method. In this case, it's pretty easy because, look, T is 48. One of the methods you've learned was substitution. If I can solve one equation for one of the variables and then plug it into the other equation, then I get one equation and one unknown. The whole idea is we have two equations and two unknowns. It would be nice if I could reduce it to one equation and one unknown, which we are happier with, right? Alright, so substitute in here. T is 48, which means I have minus 48 plus 100 is 28. There's my one equation and one unknown. Can you solve that? Yeah, bring the 48 to the other side. I get 68, so 100 is equal to 68. where A is 100 over 60. 100 over 60 is? What?
1.7.
Well, that's 10 over 6, which is 5 over 3. 3 into 5 goes 1 and 2 thirds, so that's about 1.7, right? So you can do that without a calculator. Okay, am I done?
No.
Okay. Why am I not done? I asked for the tension. How do I get T?
Put it backwards.
Come back up here to the one of the equations, right? Like the one you used to substitute. T is 40 times A. So we get T is 40A. 40 times 1.7 is about 68 what? Don't forget your units. So there's a problem involving some tension. This 68 newtons is the tension that the rope feels because somebody's pulling 100 newtons that way and you have these two masses. Now what if I increase the mass here from 40 to 60? So that would show up back there. That would become a 60. And then I would put that in instead. So you can see that increasing the masses, as you would expect, would change the tension in the rope because, you know, about to go to the rope to break. If I increase the 100 newtons here, that's going to increase the tension. Right? So there are different ways we can increase that tension that we know doing the actual experiment. So that we can actually do what that tension is. And then we can also determine, you know, what the acceleration of these two objects is, and all that's not going on. Okay, we can do all sorts of other types of tension problems and put ropes into things, so we're going to do that further into the chapter. What I'd like to do is add one more force so that we have enough forces to play with tomorrow. Okay, this is going to be number 3. We're not quite done. Well, it's a long week, right? One more class, and then you get a long break, and then no more breaks until I'm done. Because today is not Friday. Friction. I've been telling you to ignore friction. Right now, we're going to stop ignoring friction a little. So let's see what's involved. What do we think of when we think of friction? We think of heat. Well, when you rub your hands together, you generate some heat due to friction. That's one possibility. Okay? Resistance. Resistance. All right? If I slide that book horizontally, it slows down. Why?
There's
an opposing force, a friction. Okay? Friction is very complicated. You want to actually sit down and work out the details of friction. Well, people are still doing that. People are still trying to understand friction to some extent. Okay, but when I slide two objects across each other, okay, you get frictional effect. If I have this book sliding across the countertop, it slowed down, right? What if I had something smoother and slid this across? Right? Nice smooth surface, maybe it'll go further. If this top were made out of sandpaper, maybe somebody spilled some molasses on the tabletop, right? It would not slide so easily. Right? So the frictional force or the impeding force to the motion, because one object is sliding or trying to slide over another object, is what we're thinking about when we think about friction. Okay, friction has to do with the contact of objects. If you look at it, the molecular structure, and the molecular structure of solids is not nice and smooth like you see here. All right? We've got ridges and bumps and everything. If you take two things with ridges and try to slide them across, okay, you will get a certain type of effect. If those surfaces are very well matched and smooth, actually it's going to be much harder to slide these. But for us, we're not going to worry about the details. In fact, it's difficult to even do labs with friction. We've had a lab with friction, and it's one of those labs that you typically get 30 or 40% error with no problem. Because, you know, this part of the surface is different than that part of the surface, right? Because of stuff that's on it. So it is difficult to look at things. But we can do some problems, and people have done some experiments and make measurements and said, oh, well, if you're driving on a nice dry road with perfectly good tires, okay, then you slam on the brakes, your car will go a certain distance, we can tell you how far, and then if the road has ice on it or an oil, patch of oil or something, that, you're not going to respond the same. All right? Of course, you would like to rely on friction. Friction is not always bad. All right? When you put your foot on the brake and you go to come to a stop, you would hope there's some friction there to help you to stop. Right? People that are used to driving in the north, where there's a lot of snow, know what it's like to try to stop on ice. Okay, people down here find out what it's like every once in a while when there is some snow. Okay, or I guess sometimes when there's hurricanes, and people try to go through bubbles, they find out some different responses. All right, so the idea here is that we are quite familiar with friction. It's a difficult thing to model, but we can do it simplistically. There are two types of friction. There is static friction and kinetic friction. Static friction. What do we think when we think static?
Perfect.
Think about yesterday in lab. Static. Still. Not moving. Okay? This is friction in the case where an object is not moving. Okay, if I go to push this box, for example, all right, it's going to take a certain force to get it going. If I'm just pushing a little bit, maybe it's not going to go anywhere. Or think of trying to move a refrigerator. All right? You got to get the thing going, right? You start pushing on it, you've got to exert enough force to get it to move. Of course, once you've got it moving, it might be a little easier to push. What happens is that the friction between the bottom of the refrigerator and the floor is different as concerning whether the refrigerator is already moving or not. All right, so it sometimes takes more force to get something moving. So static is friction you have to overcome to get an object to move. Kinetic friction is a friction that you entail due to motion. We've seen the word kinetic possibly somewhere, but what kinetic really is has to do with motion. If I have this object sliding across the table, it slows down. The friction that's slowing it down is kinetic friction. The amount of frictional force that's impeding me from getting something to start moving is the static friction. For friction, we're going to use a small f for friction because it's not important. What are we typically use for friction? Static friction, we're going to designate as an f sub s. So if I'm pushing on the refrigerator, right, it's not moving, there's still a frictional force. It's a static frictional force. If I push harder, at some point I'm going to get just to that point where I can get it to move. And so there is a maximum value of static friction. below which any static friction, right? But again, if I'm pushing on the refrigerator, it's not moving, right? That's because the refrigerator is pushing back. Well, you know, I'm pushing on this object forward, the ground's pushing the opposite direction. And probably a picture would help here. So let's say I push on that object. If that were the only force acting, it would accelerate, right? But because of the two surfaces here, there is a frictional force in the opposite direction, opposing me trying to get that refrigerator to move, and that's static friction. If I push harder and harder, sooner or later, I am going to push enough that I'm going to overcome that static friction. And that's the maximum value. If I push any harder than this maximum value, the refrigerator will start to move. In which case, then, we will have kinetic friction taking place. And how do I measure these things? Very simply, the friction is going to be proportional to the normal force. So, for example, the kinetic friction is going to be proportional to the normal force. And when I say proportional to it, I mean I can write equal to a constant times the normal force. So we're going to put a constant little mu in here. And that constant, okay, is called a coefficient of kinetic friction. It's just a number. So the kinetic friction is some number times n. What does that number represent? Well, it represents the type of surfaces. Am I sliding a block over ice? Am I sliding, I don't know, a hockey puck over ice? Do I have good tires and I'm sliding across a dry road? That number is something that has to be looked up in a table or done experimentally. In the case of static friction, the amount of friction I have to overcome looks just like this. Again, we're going to have a mu n, except that number depends upon the fact that it's not moving. Mu s and mu n are not necessarily the same. Mu s typically is bigger than mu sub k. Which means it's easier to move an object, push an object while it's moving, than it is to get it going. Now we're going to come back tomorrow and see some examples of how to apply this. This is just the definition of these two types of friction that we're going to use. Yes. That's the one that you have to work on.